the network you need in the new economy. This is Financial Survival Radio.
Welcome to Financial Survival Radio. Every week we cover the ongoing economic collapse of America and ways to survive and thrive in the new economy. I'm your host, Jay Carter. You know, I enjoy doing this podcast for you guys. I'm here for you every single week. But you know, if this is just a weekly podcast, you got to have something else to listen to, right? There's got to be something else out there. And hopefully, in addition to all of the other podcasts that you may be downloading on a weekly basis, I hope that Jerry Robinson's podcast is one of them. I would recommend this podcast. It's a great show. It's called Follow the Money. You heard of that one? Follow the Money with Jerry Robinson. It's a great show, and he's joining us this week. I guess this is my first interview with a fellow podcaster. Wow. Well, I'm glad it's Jerry. He's good at what he does. He's also author of the book Bankruptcy of Our Nation, 12 Key Strategies for Protecting Your Finances in These Uncertain Times. Jerry, welcome to Financial Survival Radio.
Great to be here. Thanks, Jay.
I want to ask you about a few of those strategies that you outlined in the book in just a moment. But first, I guess we should talk big picture here. What sort of future are you envisioning with our economy?
Well, we've been saying the same thing like a broken record since about 2006, Jay. The economy is in a world of hurt. The Fed has stepped in and it's provided some nice stimulus money. The Federal Reserve has been, you know, pumping in money, trying to boost asset prices, trying to get unemployment to a place where it's not so severe. And what they're finding is that you can't fix debt with more debt, and that's in essence what they're trying to do. So, to answer your question, where things are heading, we basically see the QE2 coming to an end at the end of June. As we head into the remainder of the year, we fully expect the fourth quarter to be something of a juggernaut in the precious metals area, gold and silver in particular. We typically see the fourth quarter is always a very big, big mover for precious metals historically, And we expect this year to be no different. We expect the Fed to probably go ahead and move into quantitative easing part three, which They may not call it that, but you know, 2012, Jay, is going to be a presidential election year, and they're not going to tolerate any kind of fiscal mess.
Yeah, they have to do it.
Try to be reelected,
right? So, are we going to see a dollar collapse? Are we headed to hyperinflation?
Yeah, I mean, we are, and you know, one of the common themes of our message that we've been saying for some time is that hyperinflation is going to happen. But you know, for some reason, I don't know what the fixation is. For the last several years, every single year, it's been predicted by some economist out there, and unfortunately, these things take time. And unfortunately for those who keep predicting it over and over, it's going to come. It's just going to take some more time, and really, the linchpin or the kingpin, the thing that really brings this thing down, is the end of something known as the petrodollar system. Currently, every single barrel of oil around the globe is priced in dollars. That provides a tremendous, tremendous artificial demand for our dollar. It's wonderful. In fact, that happened in the late 70s. After 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window, everybody got skittish in Washington, said, what are we going to do? Our dollar's not backed up by anything anymore. And Kissinger and Nixon came up with the brilliant strategy, let's attach it to oil. And so they moved in Saudi Arabia, basically offered them weapons. They offered them military bases, protection from big bad Israel, and said, look, all you have to do in return is just price your oil that comes out of the ground in dollars. Pretty soon, other OPEC nations heard about this. You know, they're giving out free weapons, military bases. Heck, we'll price our, you know, oil and whatever. We'll price it in dollars. And so the petrodollar system was born in the early 1970s. Now, the Middle East is explosive, and we're trying to contain it. And, of course, what's at risk now is our petrodollar system. And when that collapses, which is just a matter of time, then we'll
By the way, let me interrupt you here because we've already seen the beginning of this happening where we're seeing Russia and China, Venezuela, all of these nations are quietly making deals to get out of the petrodollar system. They're doing oil deals in their own currencies or a basket of other currencies. So we see this beginning. Now where I think you're going with this is, what does it look like when the petrodollar system collapses? How does it affect
us? In essence, the artificial demand that has existed for the dollar, which has given us basically a permission slip to print lots of money because the world needs it. The world demands it. It needs dollars. So it gives the Fed a nice permission slip to print more money. And when you print more money in any economy, it inflates the standard of living. So we've experienced a wonderful standard of living because of the petrodollar system. It was a great creation, brilliant creation.
Right.
However, as the demand around the globe decreases because we no longer are pricing every barrel of oil in dollars, well, that's going to have a deflationary type of effect as the money becomes rushing back to our countries. However, inside the United States, where the dollar is no longer wanted outside of our borders, it's going to create an inflationary state, a hyperinflationary state. And what it'll cause is the Fed will have to basically suck in the money as quick as possible. The way that the Fed sucks in money is you raise interest rates because money always flows to the rate of highest return. So if you raise interest rates, money will flow right to it. So it'll go right back into the banks.
Okay.
But the problem is there's always a period of time there that the money is still out there. And so hyperinflation could last 6 to 9 months before they're actually able to put a cap on it. And in fact, I expect that it's going to be even longer than that because it'll be stealth.
So I would put the future ending of the petrodollar system on the list of one of the things, anyway, that the average guy on the street in America is not paying attention to. They do not see this coming. They do not make the connection of how it's going to affect their lives. The other thing on that list, if we were to make a list like that, is the PIGS nation, P-I-I-G-S, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, Spain. Of course, they've got a massive debt crisis going on over there. How's that going to affect us here in the U.S.?
You know, to be completely honest with you, Europe has been on my radar for some time. However, the way I view Europe is a little bit different, I guess, than other economists. I view Europe as a tremendous prototype for a coming regional currency in Africa, a coming regional currency in the Asian nations. And so I believe that there's so much invested in Europe right now that the euro itself is not going to ultimately collapse. It's going to severely be beaten down. Mm-hmm. In fact, nations may even be asked or may exit the current eurozone, you know, the monetary system. However, I believe the euro itself is going to thrive and survive in the coming years. And in addition to that, that's a problem for the United States dollar. You see, the mainstream press loves to bash Europe. They love it here in the United States because every time euro goes down, the dollar goes up. All currencies work like seesaws. Whenever the dollar goes down, it's going down in relation to another currency. Well, the dollar and the euro is a tremendous currency pair. And whenever the euro goes down, the dollar goes up. So the mainstream press loves it. Washington loves it. But the problem is that the European Union is, even though it has its problems, tremendous, tremendous structural problems, I believe that it has a future, and therefore, because of that, it's going to continually pose a challenge to the U.S. dollar.
Jerry Robinson is author of the book called Bankruptcy of Our Nation, 12 Key Strategies for Protecting Your Finances in These Uncertain Times. I want to cover some of those strategies, Jerry. Number three from the book, create a network of friends and family you can trust in a crisis. Give me some ideas as to how to make that happen and why it's important.
You know, something about that that's somewhat interesting is that I've lived in many different places. I have been one of those very rugged, individualistic kind of people who don't really feel like I need anybody. You know, of course, I have friends and family.
Yeah.
But half the time, I don't even really know who my neighbors are. And I think I'm a typical American. I think most Americans today are just so busy doing everything that they really don't know who their neighbors are.
Yes.
Maybe they're not even plugged into a small group of any kind, maybe a book club, or they don't really have much going on the outside. So one of the things that we realize pretty quickly is that in times of economic crisis, if this thing boils down to what we expect it to boil down to, the need for having a close network of people that you can trust, that you can turn to, is vital. It's absolutely vital. That can take the form of a small group, a church. It can take the form of just a small group of guys that, you know, that all have kind of the same mentality. Look, if you believe that the economy is going to collapse, you need to find other people who believe along the same lines, because they will provide you motivation.
Right.
They'll also provide you with inspiration as you're making your preparations. I believe people need to be preparing, not running for the hills, not buying canned food and buying guns and living out in the woods, but they need to be preparing in their own homes. In the event that nothing happens, basically anything you've stored up, anything you've prepared for, you can give away to the poor and the needy. No harm, no foul.
Yeah. That gets into sort of a spiritual angle here too, Jerry. You know, when you talk about how, you know, you need to create this network of friends and family, you really need to do that in any situation, whether there's a crisis or not. But it seems to me that in this time of economic collapse, more and more people really are kind of putting a moat around their house in a way, just drawing into themselves, which is the worst thing they can do.
It is. It really is. It's one of the things that that we have even recently talked about here on our program, is the fact that there is a need for individuals to connect on some level in the middle of all this, especially urban dwellers. You know, many of us who live in cities, most of us have no clue. I tell you what, think about this for a minute, Jay. If let's just go different scenarios just real quickly in 30 seconds. If there were a nuclear cloud that all of a sudden occurred in my city, I live in Houston. Mm-hmm. If I heard a nuclear cloud or a chemical biological warfare, or if something negative happened in my town, I don't know what to do. I didn't grow up in the country. I have no clue what to do.
Right.
If economic collapse, if the grocery store is all of a sudden empty, I would actually be eating grass unless I had actually stored up some food, because all major cities have about a three-day food supply for the entire population.
Yes,
if the supply chain breaks down.
It's a just-in-time system, right.
It's a just-in-time system. So it's vital, I think, for us to band together in some form or fashion, whatever form it takes, band together with like-minded individuals, especially in a spiritual context. If these people are believers, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to encourage one another in times of crisis.
Absolutely. I want to cover a few more of these strategies here in your book. I have to admit, Jerry, I've got a slight problem with this next strategy we're going to cover, and I want to talk to you about it. It's strategy number 5, save at least 15% of your income now. I agree it's good to have something saved up. But is it really a good idea to save the income in the form of Federal Reserve notes?
Well, actually, if you go to strategy 6, we explain how to hold that income. Basically,
okay.
what you're going to do, we've created 5 levels of financial freedom, and what you're going to end up having is 6 months of liquidity at all times.
Okay.
And this 6 months is going to take the form of threes. It's going to be a trio. One-third in foreign currencies that are stable, one-third in precious metals, and one-third in U.S. dollar-denominated assets. Now, why dollars? Well, because you have to pay your bills. You know, you're going to have to convert it to dollars anyway. So 2 months in U.S. dollar-denominated assets, one-third in foreign currencies that are stable, and one-third in precious metals. We've actually back-tested this. We had the University of Tulsa actually do a back-test on this, and we discovered that this thing beats the snot out of just a regular savings account. If you actually would put this for the last 19 years, we've actually done this study.
Mm-hmm.
If you just do this in threes, one-third, 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 it's astounding. Now, the foreign currencies that I used at the time on this study, and what I currently use now for my own cash,
yep,
is the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar. I'm also a fan of the Swiss franc, although it's a little bit overvalued right now,
mm-hmm,
and even the euro, which we back-tested as well. But the Canadian dollar and the Australian dollar are two of my favorite foreign currencies for that purpose. But again, saving money and then holding it in a diversified manner is vital.
Got it. And I love this strategy. Number 10 on your outline of 12 strategies for protecting your finances, diversify your income. And what you mean here, correct me if I'm wrong, is we all need to derive our income from more than just one place. How does somebody do that?
Okay, well, this is a really vital one. In fact, we're currently creating a product on the different retirement income streams that one can create. I was a financial advisor several years ago. When I was a financial advisor, I learned that there were 11 streams of income that someone could potentially have in retirement. Well, since 1995, I've been developing my own multiple streams of income. I'm up to about 7 right now. And through research, through my time as a financial advisor and even my own research, we developed 16. We discovered 5 more. So we're putting together a product right now. It's still several weeks away. But it's called the 16 streams of income that you can have in retirement. It's amazing how many income streams that you can really develop if you just take time, turn the tube off, you know, and actually go to work. And so diversifying your income is a vital, vital thing. I think most people, Jay, have heard, look, you need to diversify your investments. And that's very true. You definitely need to. In fact, when it comes to investments, we use something called PACE. It's the PACE philosophy that we've developed. It's precious metals for P, agricultural commodities AC, and then E for energy. So definitely need to diversify your investments. And, of course, you can use dividend-paying stocks as well. There's other things you can do. But then you need to diversify your savings. We talked about the thirds there. But, of course, as you pointed out in the strategy number 10, diversify your income. That's a very vital area to do, and we are constantly trying to work on ways to help people understand how to do that.
Tell me if we're on the same page here, Jerry, because when I hear diversify your income, I think about what I personally am doing in my own life, and that would be having a stream of income through businesses, such as this podcast is a business. It's an online business where we sell things from time to time and have other little streams of income. We also have rental property, little apartment houses, and big apartment houses in different areas. That's kind of what I'm thinking about when we're talking about diversifying income or different streams of income from different places. What do you have in mind? What are your different streams of income?
Well, there's so, like as I mentioned, there's so many. I mean, they all come from basically three main sources. You can develop multiple streams of income through paper assets, which are things like dividends, interest, whatever that might be, cash value, life insurance, you know, borrowing from that, whatever it might be. You also have real estate. You know, there's all kinds of income streams that you can develop off of real estate. And then, of course, there's your own business. They all come from these three main sources. Now, I tell you, you know, I have 7 streams of income, and I started in 1995 with 1, and it's taken me a long time. And along the way, I was able to quit my job and focus on the income streams. It takes time, and I tell you what, it's not for everybody. The skills that are required and the demands on your time, they grow with every single stream that you add. And Jay, if you mention real estate, that's rental real estate, that it can take up a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so it takes skills, it takes expertise as you develop each one, and it can really make a lot of demands on your time. So it's kind of a give and take. So I would urge people who are interested in doing something like this to do some research. You know, obviously, we're putting together a product. There are other products out there. But these are the three main sources that they come from: real estate, paper assets, and your own business.
Got it. I've been sort of consuming, devouring might be a better word, your website, FTMDaily.com, which, by the way, FTM stands for Follow the Money, FTMDaily.com. And I really like the way that you're kind of looking at the world around you and just looking at what you're personally doing, always analyzing, why am I doing what I'm doing? And you wrote recently about how you woke up one day, Jerry, and realized you're caught up in a consumption trap. Can you talk about that?
The consumption trap is something that that I recently came to terms with not too long ago. It's really, really something. In fact, we just created a brand new free report that's available on our website about the three powerful forces that are basically eroding your wealth and the four things that you can do to protect yourself. And it's all about that consumption trap. You know, I was sitting on my couch one day, Jay, and I was watching TV. I had a bottle of water. And I realized at that moment, something struck me. I don't know what it was. I had been thinking about something along these same lines, and I realized it all of a sudden that I looked around my house and I tried to find something in my house that I had actually produced. I produce zilch. I produce nothing. In fact, the key to the way that financial success today, Jay, is sold is how much of your production can you outsource? I mean, I have people entertain me on TV. I pay for Hulu. I pay for Netflix. I'm sitting on a couch that was constructed God knows where. I'm drinking bottled water that costs maybe $1 a bottle. I'm paying for utilities. I outsource everything. Right. And then what's funny is, Jay, is that then I ask myself, why am I so broke? How come I can't get ahead? Well, I can't get ahead using this situation because I'm outsourcing everything. I'm choosing the poorest person in this country, still, unless they're living on the street, is outsourcing everything. We live like kings today. And so,
and we don't realize, a lot of us are oblivious to the fact that we're living like kings.
We're totally oblivious. And I tell you what, the day that I realized that, and it was not too long ago, to be honest with you, I realized that and I realized, my goodness. And I started putting together this concept of the consumption trap, and I realized the role that corporations and advertisers and media and the financial institutions, they have concocted a web that is so sticky that they teach you from birth that you're supposed to outsource everything. You never even get a choice in the matter. You're not going to produce anything. You're going to consume everything. You specialize in consumption. They specialize in production. They get rich. You get poor, period. That's how it works.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is if you want to actually get ahead in life, you have to be a producer. The producers are the ones who make money. The producers are the ones who employ people. The consumers are the ones who work for the producers. They go to school. They work real hard. They try to get a job at one of the producers. And then they take all the money they get, and they give it to other producers. It's an astounding economy we live in. But those who wake up to this understand that, wow, if I do want to get ahead, I have to find out what am I producing. And the way to begin this, Jay, is to begin looking around your house and saying, what am I currently consuming that I might be able to produce? Maybe I can cut some fat, first of all, but then second of all, what can I actually produce? And then after that, maybe even think, can I mass produce this? Or, you know, take on some sort of multiple streams of income. But either way, we're in a very strong period of economic madness right now. The consumption trap is just a perfect example of it.
Yeah. I think that we really should. I don't think we can underscore this enough, because what you're talking about there toward the end of that last piece is different, you know, various levels of understanding and various levels of, I guess, solving the problem. I mean, what fascinated me about this discussion was the idea that as a society, like you said, we tend to default. It's just default to outsource consumption. And in some cases, not all, but some, there are ways to stop outsourcing some of our needs, food production, childcare, household management, you know, where we could find ways to get off of that exhausting treadmill that so many people find themselves on to pay for it. That's sort of level one. That's sort of where you find ways to cut the fat and find ways to maybe make your life a little bit easier by meeting some of your own needs instead of working your butt off to pay for outsourcing all of it. But then you start going to those other levels where maybe I can turn this into a business. Maybe I can turn it into an empire, some way that I can produce rather than consume.
So true. And that's really that's the insanity. In fact, I have a friend I talk about in this recent free report we have on our website. And basically, you know, this guy that I know, he is working a job that he hates. He's been working this job for some time. He told me the other day he wakes up in the morning and he has to say positive things to himself in order to get out of bed. He's so desperate to get out of what he's in. But when I asked him about his consumption, and of course, you know, he's got a new car, he has a big mortgage, he has his kids in private school. I mean, he has outsourced everything. I mean, he has, you know, a huge cable bill. And so what's so funny is that we have to go hop on the treadmill and run the rat race to pay for this consumption trap. And you really make a great point when you bring that up. I mean, that really does highlight what I'm talking about. People can get off of this rat race. They can get off of life's treadmill. They just have to start becoming a producer and not just a consumer only.
And, of course, it all helps to be more conscious, too, about what you're doing. So let me end on this note, perhaps. I guess one of the things that I saw that you had is there's one thing, just one thing that we can all start doing today that'll ensure a more secure financial future. Jerry, what is that one thing?
I would tell people to obviously educate themselves. They need to be listening to programs like Financial Survival Radio.
Thank you.
They need to be listening to programs that can help them. They need to be reading. I read a study about billionaires the other day. They spend 2 to 3 hours every single day reading, not just sitcom or not just comic books. They're reading about the world. They're reading about money. You got to educate yourself. So put information into your mind, into your ears that is good from good sources, and then put it into action. Don't just be a hearer of it. Be a doer of it.
Excellent advice. The book is Bankruptcy of Our Nation. The author is Jerry Robinson. You can also listen to his weekly Follow the Money podcast and find it at ftmdaily.com. Jerry, thanks so much for being on Financial Survival Radio.
My pleasure, Jay. Thank you.
You can read more about Jerry Robinson, find his website, and all the details about Follow the Money at our website, financialsurvivalradio.com. Just go to the show notes for episode number 40. Call our listener feedback voicemail line at 512-522-6146. That's 512-522-6146. Or send email to letters@financialsurvivalradio.com. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is FS Radio. And we can continue the conversation on our Facebook page. Go to Facebook and look for us, Financial Survival Radio. I want to thank my guest, Jerry Robinson, this week for joining us here. I'm Jay Carter. Thank you all very much for listening.